Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
Sonia, we're in Season 3 of X-Men Evolution. We're up to Episode 11, an episode called Dark Horizons Part 1. Another interesting episode of X-Men Evolution. Very exciting how the show's quality just continues to increase for us first-time watchers. Before we start talking about that, I want to encourage everyone to follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. We love interacting with everyone in the community there. And most importantly, if you want to support the show, you don't have to give us money, you don't have to listen to advertisements. Just take 2 minutes out of your day and leave us a nice 5-star review on iTunes. Again, we really appreciate any support you can throw us our way in terms of that. Now, Sonia, before we start talking about the show this week, what's been going on? We're out of extracurricular Marvel content
for
discuss.
Now. Yeah, yeah. We have a few weeks before some new extracurricular Marvel content starts coming out, right?
Right. I've been very much enjoying For All Mankind. We're up to season 2. Mm-hmm. Really blowing through it as fast we can. The show is quite excellent.
Yeah, I agree.
Again, I really encourage everyone to seek that out and give it a whirl, especially if you like the NASA Apollo 13 genre of film.
Yeah, very close to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. We haven't been watching anything else really lately, have we?
It's been good to get outside, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's springtime in New York City. We're fully vaccinated. The CDC just relaxed some of the mask mandates.
Right.
Or guidelines, I should say. And
it still feels a little strange walking around New York without a mask outside, but we've been trying to embrace it, because if you're fully vaxxed, the vaccines are, you know, according to the data, they're working great. So I feel safe.
Yeah.
And, you know...
Just weird. It's like...
It is weird.
Some kind of return to normalcy and...
What kind of journey it's been. It was nice walking around New York. It was 70 degrees last night on Friday after work. Just seeing everyone really happy. You know, they're still doing outdoor dining for a lot of these restaurants, but seeing like restaurants filled to capacity and people waiting for a seat and just hobnobbing casually on the street, it sort of was very heartwarming to me. It's just like New York might be getting back to normal here. People are ready to smile and have fun again. And
I think I read that the outdoor dining stuff is going to stay because people just like it. And
well, it can't stay forever because the weather is quite shitty.
No, they had it up all winter.
They did.
Heat lamps on the inside.
I didn't know how people were doing that. Like, you know, walking around here January and February, seeing people in the makeshift little huts they build on the sidewalks.
Yeah.
Even with the heat lamps, it seemed miserable.
Yeah, I agree.
It
didn't seem worth it to me.
And also, that was when the pandemic was still quite...
For that reason, especially, it didn't seem worth it. But even, like, if the pandemic hadn't been around, it just looked so... freezing. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how people are dealing with that in New York, but it's nice. I feel like there's a nice shift in attitude, at least in our part of the world. I mean, I know it's not quite the same everywhere, either internationally or even in the United States. There's like spots where it still might be like more dangerous than others.
Yeah, it's pretty localized.
All right, but I am feeling safer personally in New York City. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to sort of like reintegrate that part of our lives, which we've sort of put away in the back closet of our brains the past year.
Yeah.
So I hope everyone out there is doing well too, and like getting vaccinated and just feeling
like there's hope around the corner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, content wise, in terms of other stuff we've been like watching, I mean, not much really. It's kind of a lull period. Mm-hmm. When's that Black Widow movie coming out? Like July?
I thought August, but maybe, I don't know.
I think July.
Summer, sometime.
Summer, yeah. So a month away from that or so, a month and a half, whatever it might be. That'll be, I'm looking forward to that. That seems like just a nice, like, pointless movie to kick off returning to the movie theaters for. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I mean, I know we'll have the option to buy it on Disney Plus. I don't know what we're going to do just yet.
Yeah, we'll see how we feel when it comes.
Right, we'll see. Like, I feel like month to month, things are going to really start to radically change.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, obviously, the next few Marvel movies aren't that... They don't seem like that spellbinding. Black Widow, Shang-Chi, Eternals, right? Like, those are the next three. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm interested to see all three, but I'm not, like, I'm not invested in any of them in any way.
Okay.
So, I mean, the good ones, the ones we want to see are Doctor Strange 2 and Spider-Man 3, obviously.
I want to see Shang-Chi and the Eternals. They but what I've seen and heard from them so far looks really cool. I'm not invested with the characters from beforehand from Marvel, but it's kind of, we talked about this quite a while ago about how like the Marvel movies, there's so many of them, they're so ubiquitous, they have to start kind of branching out into different genres, and we were looking forward to that, and I think that's exactly what's happening, and that's what I'm excited
about. So you want to embrace the unknown, embrace the variety.
Yeah.
And I want to be hit over the head with like the biggest characters and the most outrageous plots.
New and innovative directors, like different styles of movie making. Like, it could be cool.
You're probably right. I think it'll be good. Oh, you know what's a little thing? Adam, one of our biggest fans and supporters, keyed me into anyway. I saw on Facebook. They're thinking of reviving Batman the Animated Series for HBO Max.
That would be cool.
Now, I don't know what that means. It just seems like there's been a lot of iterations of the Kevin Conroy, you know, voiced Batman since the original animated series. You know, they spun it off with the Justice League and other sort of versions. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think if you're going to say we're bringing back Batman the Animated Series, it's got to look like the original. You got to have as many voice actors, the original ones that you can get that are still alive. Because I know a few of them have
passed. That's tricky, though, because voices change over time.
Well, I mean, but still, I mean, Mark Hamill's the Joker, I'm still sure would be good.
Yeah.
And okay. Kevin Conroy can still do the Batman voice. It's not, I don't, he hasn't changed that much.
All right.
But my point is, like, I don't want to see it, like, get a new slicker presentation. I didn't even like that. I mean, the reason I fell off Batman the Animated Series is when they started changing the animation.
Yeah, me too.
In itself. They changed Batman's suit a little bit. They started introducing the little Robin kid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying those episodes are bad or anything. They just weren't as memorable to me as the original ones, which felt like the great thing about Batman the Animated Series was that it felt like it was a cartoon from the 1930s, 1940s that they just magically airlifted to the present day.
It was just the animation style really got me more than anything else. It's like beautiful art deco.
Painted on black construction paper.
So pretty.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to continue in that style. And I just would want, if it comes back, I'd want it to feel like, hey, these were a bunch of lost episodes we never aired. I don't want it to just seem any different. You know, I love one of the best things about Batman the Animated Series too is those title cards they had before each episode.
Yeah.
That little painting where it says like the Riddler returns or whatever, more like clever pun than that maybe. And you just get like a classic mystery or detective story or just something where Batman's going up against a classic villain. Just give me that. I mean, I don't need it to be that mind blowing. I don't need like the story of Batman to continue from where it left off necessarily. I think it would be tricky if you're doing X-Men the animated series, if you were reviving that, which I don't think they're ever going to do, by the way. Even though I know people like are trying to wish that into existence, I think in some sense you would need the story to continue because that was a serialized show. Batman the animated series, it kind of, there are story beats that continued, especially when they branched off into Justice League. But it was really not a serialized show at all. It was just sort of like one-off adventures, nothing. Like, I remember,
there's some like two-parters and stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, when we talked about Mask of the Phantasm, you can go back and listen to that episode we did. We discussed how we saw that in the movies, and then we came home and were like waiting for the events of Mask of the Phantasm to be addressed in the next latest Batman episode, and it never was. And you're like, wait, isn't the Joker dead or something? Like, what? What happened to everything that happened in Mask of the Phantasm? And that's fine. Like, as a kid, I didn't get it, but as an adult, fine. So I just would want to be like that. I'd want, like, Batman to show up. There's a new mystery. It's just, like, he's still the same age, same guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a way, too, I don't know. I don't know if that's how you make a successful reboot.
I don't know if I need that even. I think I just would be excited to see what else could be done because HBO Max so far has been delivering pretty quality content to us.
Yeah, it has.
A lot of other things. So whatever, they're doing it. Great. I'm watching.
Yeah. It's just one of those weird things where I'd be excited to see it again, but I just don't know what I'd really like be desiring from it. It's tricky. I think it's like a tricky thing to bring back. Like, for instance, there's been talks for a long time about Mike Judge reviving King of the Hill. And supposedly the last I heard of it from one of the writers who did an interview, he said, oh yeah, like that's happening. They're in deep negotiations. They're bringing it back. And the premise is that the characters have all aged like 20 years since the last episode.
An appropriate amount of
time. So Bobby is going to be in his 20s or something, or in his early 30s. Hank's going to be like near retirement. And that's just sort of like,
I mean, that's cool because you get a whole different set of scenarios out of the characters that way. And also, they're supposed to be realistic in the first place.
Yeah.
So for it to mirror reality makes sense. With Batman, it's not supposed to be realistic in the first place, so I don't really care.
Yeah, Batman just exists in another time, in another world.
Yeah.
Kind of, like, not moored to anything.
Right.
You know, it makes me think, like, honestly, now that I... Okay, this is what I think. I don't want a straight-up revival of Batman the Animated Series. I would love a brand new Batman animated show aimed at, like, kids and adults like the original one was.
Mm.
Like, put your own new style on it. Like, maybe a new design for Batman. I love the original art style, as we discussed. But I would also love, like a really, like, beautiful new type of art style with a lot... with flashier animation... But it has to be totally different. It couldn't be like a takeoff. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So I'm just saying, like, give me like a new gritty animated Batman show with new Batman adventures, not like a kid show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tricky to say too, because the original show was for kids, even though it appealed to adults. But I think like the having
did it. Did you know adults at that time who watched it? It feels to us now as adults.
I think maybe I didn't know any adults then that watched it, but I would say that. As an adult watching it today, it's not, you don't feel condescended to. It's like, oh, this was for kids. This is something from my childhood. You're just like, oh, wow, this was a really well-made piece of art.
Yeah.
So I think if you're putting on an HBO Max, then you could make it almost like a PG-13 R-rated show if you wanted to go in that direction too. Have some blood, have some, you know, violence and just some more like adult, grittier scenarios with Batman.
Mm-hmm.
You could do that. I mean, I don't know how many kids are tuning into HBO Max. So I don't know. Let us know what you think like would be the best way to bring Batman back. I've said it multiple times, I think, on this podcast, too. It's like what I want to see from HBO is Batman, the HBO show,
yeah.
Live action. You do like – you give it like the full A number one HBO treatment, 10 episodes of Batman, like and then it culminates in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And – it's you do, and that's like the revolutionary thing. It's like you better have seen the first 10 episodes because the movie's coming out and it's Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this is the epic conclusion. Like maybe each season is almost like a different villain. You know, like the first season is the Riddler.
Yeah.
So you can get the Riddler Batman movie. And I think people would go and watch the 10 episodes because they love Batman anyway. And
mm-hmm.
this is like the audience is going to be connected. I think like that is the revolution we have not yet seen with the comic book stuff. Is like establish it as a TV show where you can get into so many nitty gritty details and character development,
mm-hmm.
and then like blow it up. The movie is the big blow up where it doesn't have to be. It could be like a lot more intense action and like satisfying payoffs than instead of squeezing it all into one movie and then hoping for the sequel where you can like kind of squeeze in more too, kind of like Disney Plus in reverse a little bit. You know, because Disney Plus, it's like it had all those movies with these ancillary characters. Now they're exploring the ancillary characters and they're going to feed back into the movies a little bit. But you're not getting 10 Spider-Man episodes. You're getting 10 Scarlet Witch episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, I think it should happen one day that you get the Batman HBO show. It just makes too much sense to me, but I don't know. The thing about Batman is they're... when it comes to live-action Batman, they're seemingly very protective of that character. They had all those CW shows throughout the years. Batman was never a guy.
Yeah, wasn't there one about him?
Well, Gotham, like when he was like a little kid. Like they, but never like Prime Batman, the TV show, has like happened. It's always been like you had Batwoman.
Right.
You had like Arrow. I mean, like you had just like the minor DC character. And it's amazing that they even did Superman again.
Yeah.
But maybe they felt easier doing Superman because there's some precedent for Superman television shows working mm-hmm. in the past. You know, Lois and Clark and a few others. Or, you know, Smallville. So, but I don't know. I think, like, the Batman TV show would be an epic thing. I think Batman works best as a TV show, even, too. Because it's just, like, these weird, like, noir serialized stories. Having it be a movie is almost feels like it's, like, overburdening a single movie with, like, establishing the mythos.
They always do the backstory. I feel like it's just such a part of pop culture by now. Everyone knows Batman's parents were killed in a back alley, and that's why he's messed up.
You said, like, they always do the backstory. That's what the Gotham show was essentially the entire backstory made into a TV show.
I know.
I mean, that's not being entirely fair to it, but, like, essentially.
Yeah.
I think, like...
Same with Spider-Man. By now, everybody knows he gets... bitten by a radioactive spider.
Well, Marvel did the cool thing where they sidestepped the origin this time.
Yeah.
They just sort of, like, allude to it.
I appreciated that, yeah.
Yeah.
But by now, it's like some of these superhero characters are so ubiquitous. Their stories are so ubiquitous. Like,
that there's no sense in... Well, that's
why retell it over and
That's
over.
Something we liked about the new Clark and Lois show.
Yeah.
Is that, like, they showed his backstory, but as a montage.
Right.
And it was, like, a well-done, arty montage. Mm-hmm. It was 30 seconds, and it was nice.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we'll look out for Batman the Animated Series. If that ever comes back, we'll certainly talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's transition to... X-Men Evolution. We're nearing the conclusion of season three. We've got three episodes to go.
Mm-hmm.
This one right now is a two-parter. Part one of two parts, Dark Horizons.
Right.
Before we start, I'll say that I noticed it was written by the same two guys, Chris Yost and I think Craig Kyle, uh-huh. who did the X-23 episode, which we loved the previous
week. Yeah, the X-23 episode was probably the best one of the series so far. This one, I felt like the animation
took a turn. I don't know why the X-23
episode... I don't know if it was just choppy. Is it Disney Plus or...
No, it just looked like X-23 episode looked really cool.
Yeah.
It had really great animation. This one looked just like classic X-Men Evolution, just clunky and boring.
Choppy. But also there weren't any huge fight scenes or anything. Not a whole lot happens in this one. This is really a setup episode.
Yeah.
And, like, the main thing is Rogue goes around and steals everybody's powers because she's being controlled by Mesmero.
Right, that's
and something's
going to
happen.
There's some good character beats in this episode, mm-hmm. which we'll get into.
Okay, yeah. So it starts out with Rogue going around the X-Mansion first at nighttime and stealing everyone's powers. So she goes into Professor X's room, Jean's room, Kitty's room.
Nobody notices or even remembers the next day.
They all just feel like they had a bad dream or, like, a headache. They wake up late.
I felt a bit nitpicky about this. Rogue keeps the people's powers for a long time.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like she's really collecting powers and she uses them later, like, much later.
Yeah. It's like the way I understood Rogue in the past, at least from the animated series, was... You take the guy's powers, first of all, it's like very, it's like a violent.
It's like a traumatic incident for both parties involved.
Well, less so Rogue from the mental standpoint, but physically the person who gets the power stolen, they're like in a coma or something.
But usually like by the time the person like wakes up from the coma.
They have a horrible hangover.
And her powers
the powers she switch have, back
exactly
yeah,
she right. doesn't have their powers anymore by the time they feel better
right so usually. This is different. It's like she just takes the powers, the person wakes up, they don't even remember it,
and she's like
and those people have their powers back too,
right, and she's just library cataloging them.
It is cool that like, when you see Rogue take 100 mutants powers, as they've shown us in previous episodes,
yeah,
there's something like
no,
satisfying
that's awesome,
about it
then
yeah.
she's like the ultimate mutant because yeah. she has everybody's powers
right.
plus her own.
She goes from being quite wimpy to right overpowered,
right, not that they show her as wimpy in this, but as yeah. we've discussed before, unless she's stealing somebody's power, mainly she's like trained to do flips and karate and stuff and that's
yeah.
it right? Unless she steals power from somebody else, but
so yeah, I did pick that a little bit. I was like the power inconsistency
it's thing. Also inconsistent in the way she uses it, because she, as we'll see later when she's going around stealing more powers, she uses the powers that she's picked up previously to, like, trick the next person into getting
yeah.
their powers, which is fine. But at times she's also very easily, like, overpowered, or, like, Toad manages to, like, hop away from her for quite a long time, which, like, she has all these powerful mutants'
yeah.
powers, like... I don't know.
It's one of those things
where it's just like it's for the convenience of the plot of the episode and nothing more.
That's true. I mean, let's chalk it up to the fact that Mesmero is controlling her like a video game, and so he's like trying to steer her,
uh-huh.
and it's not as easy as it looks, perhaps. I had a little bit. Professor X is just, it just seems that like they've established in the show that Professor X has to be actively concentrating and using his power for his powers to work, as opposed to just being like ultra
it's
aware
not passive
that, right yeah. yeah I just think that in my understanding of Professor X is that if someone's sneaking into his bedroom at night, he would somehow be
the alarm bells would go off,
right, his mental triggers would go off, he just wouldn't be sleeping happily,
right,
like when X-23 snuck up on him and, or when he wheeled up to X-23 in the mansion and didn't like think anything was wrong,
mm-hmm.
that was a problem for me. So you get a little bit more of that in this episode too.
Yeah.
But, all right. So Rogue is going around. She's controlled by Mesmero. She's stealing everyone's powers. What happens next?
Right. We haven't seen Mesmero yet, so we don't know all that. But
right.
anyway, so then it's the next morning. Kitty wakes up. It's late. Everyone's late to school. She has to wake up everybody else in the X-Mansion. she does say, like, oh, my head hurts. Like, what a weird night's sleep.
Rogue doesn't
something.
Remember what she did either.
And none Rogue also wakes up, like, feeling kind of bad and having, like, had bad dreams. She's like, oh, I think I need some therapy. I'm going to skip breakfast this morning. And then we get, like, a jaunty scene of all the ex-kids making breakfast together.
I felt very related to Rogue in that moment. If you ever walk into, like, a big family scene or a friend scene where everyone's doing something and you're just, like, not... You weren't invited
you're not engaged
or
engaged with it yet.
You just feel kind of like an outsider and you walk away. I feel like that's happened to me many times in my life.
Aww.
It's like, even if you say, like, how can I help? And people are like, oh, well, we're taking care of it. And you're like, okay, well, I guess you're all having fun.
Guess I'll go.
You all just like know like what to do. Somehow you've all signed each other tasks and you're working in harmony, and I'm just this like thumbtack on the side.
I don't know if that's what happened to her exactly,
right,
though.
Well, that's what I felt watching the scene. Aww. Triggered something in me. No, it's okay. It's the last day of school, though.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because Scott and Jean are seniors and they're graduating. Is Rogue... We know Rogue is 17, but I don't know if she's a senior.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like it.
Right. We don't really know what Rogue's graduation status is.
Right. So they all go to school, but, like, Rogue doesn't go into the school. Instead, she gets into a black, like, limousine-type car outside the school when she gets there. Scott and Jean are walking down the school hallway talking about graduation. Scott's kind of salty about all his experiences at this school and all of, like, the mutant hatred that he's gotten over the years.
He says, I can't wait to never forget this place. I mean, no, I'm sorry. He says, I can't wait to forget this place immediately.
Yeah.
And I actually felt more like the Scott Summers I know, just being sort of an angry, righteous loner in his own right, too.
Did you identify with that feeling as well?
Yeah, definitely. It made me think of, like, a lot about the last week of high school and what I thought most happened. I've never quite joined the last week of high school. I mean, obviously, because when you're senior and it's the last week, you're not really doing anything. A lot of times you can just leave early, which I remember doing.
I don't remember my last week of high school at all.
Yeah, I right. I don't have many, like, specific memories. I just remember the idea that, like, we didn't have to stay. And it did feel very liberating.
Mm.
And, I remember, like, even the last day, I didn't even go in the last day, because
you were like, whatever, I'm going to graduation.
You just through the grapevine, you, like, figure out with your friends and other people, like, wait, you don't actually have to go in, do you? What could they do to you at this point?
Right.
So, those are, like, some kind of nice memories, just feeling, like, that ultimate liberation feeling as a kid and looking forward to college or whatever.
Yeah.
And, graduation itself, but how was your high school graduation? Was that a memorable experience, or is it just kind of whatever?
I mean, my high school is in New York City, and it was 4,000 kids. It was like, I think the graduating class was like 1,000 people, so we couldn't fit in the school auditorium. So the school every year would, like, have their graduation at Lincoln Center.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, that's kind of memorable, I guess. But at the same time, it's like you don't walk across the stage or anything because there's 1,000 graduates.
Yeah.
So they just kind of read 1,000 names off the list, and it takes forever, and it was like... Mm.
I do remember people being very happy. Like, that's the best part, is your friends are very... Everyone's happy. There's, like, a good mood.
Mm-hmm.
The annoying part is dealing with your family, I think. That's just sort of just that feeling of, like, they want pictures and they just futzing with your hair or just, like, you get into little fights with them, things like that. And, but, yeah, so... I mean, but it is one of those weird moments in your life, though, graduating high school. It's definitely, I think, it was more a milestone for me than graduating college.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, my college graduation, it was fun because you're with your college friends and you're like drinking that day or after it, and there's like a party. But in terms, it just felt like I felt like I accomplished something by graduating college, but at the same time...
I felt like college was more of, like, a momentous occasion because, like, when you graduate high school, you know what's coming next. You already have a plan for the next 4 years, which at that point in your life is, like, the foreseeable future. That's, like, a quarter of your life. You know? Like, it's, like, a lot of time is already spoken for where you're like, all right, if you're going to college anyway, that's, like, how... For me, that's how it felt.
Right.
Because I was like, all right, it's a done deal. Like, I already, like... did the application and had been accepted, and, like, that's the plan. So But when I graduated college, I didn't have a plan afterwards. I didn't have a job lined up.
I didn't have a job lined up.
Anything. So that really felt like the plunge of like, oh, like now I have to really like be responsible for myself and make decisions.
Living in this fun world with my friends and like off-campus college housing and just doing whatever.
Yeah.
And then you're like moving back home temporarily and looking in the newspaper for, or looking online for any kind of job.
Yeah.
And you immediately feel like my college degree is worthless because like I don't have experience to get an actual job, at least with the degree. I majored in philosophy quite stupidly.
Yeah. I mean,
graduated like right before the like the first major recession too. Mm-hmm. So I was coming into the job market like in 2000. When did I graduate? Like 06, I guess.
Yeah, I graduated 07. So
right, yeah, 06. So it's like right during or before the recession.
Right before that recession hit, yeah.
So I was just trying to apply anywhere. And I eventually, I mean, the job, I got a Borders bookstore. I was working in my like parents' local town in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Which sucks. But then like, you know, you do that for, I mean, I did that for like 9 to 10 months. And then I had a friend who like moved to, got an apartment in New York, wanted me to move with him. And I did. And then somehow I like got real lucky and like I knew somebody, got me a job working as a clerk in a law firm. Mm-hmm. And so that was a cool job because the job was, I was essentially a courier for these lawyers. So I got to go around New York City delivering papers to different courthouses, and it like, it let me explore New York in a way that was like interesting. And like, I kind of, they didn't care like how long it took me to do it. Kind of thing, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I was able to like go and get some lunch and just like wander around, like take the long way back. I also was working the late night shift too, so like by the time I'd get back at 5 o'clock, everyone had gone home as well, so I had the office a little bit to myself. It was just like a nice like entry to New York job. It paid absolute shit, but
at least you had a job and you could
I was able to like just barely support myself, like all my money was going to rent, but
that's the story of New York City.
That's the story of New York City, like being young in your 20s, living in New York for the first time, just having a bunch of roommates and like all your little like fun 20s problems. Anyway, what
you're talking, oh yeah, graduations we were talking about.
Yeah.
My college graduation actually was memorable because I went to the University of Arizona in Tucson, and the tradition there is to like, instead of throwing your hat, your cap up in the air, the tradition is to throw tortillas around.
Oh, wow, that's funny.
Which had been banned at some point because I guess just it was like real messy. Like the janitors didn't like it because it would like attract birds into the auditorium. And then,
you
know,
but
whatever.
You don't give a fuck as a graduate.
Yeah, I just thought it was, I don't know, it was those like concerns. A very memorable occasion because everybody just did it anyway. So you had to
you went to secretly school.
Like hide a tortilla inside here.
This is very stupid. Oh my god, I can imagine you secretly hiding your tortillas. How worried you would have been. That's fun. I remember my commencement speaker at my college graduation was like the runner-up to season one of The Apprentice.
Oh really?
This dude who was just, this was in 2006, he was just talking about like, and if you get out there in the business world, you're gonna meet people like Donald Trump who you're gonna have to really work hard to impress.
Oh my.
And it was just a really stupid speech. And I remember it was like the next year Obama was the commencement speaker at my college. I was like,
oh, you missed the boat.
Missed the boat on that.
I can't even remember who was the commencement speaker at my
probably
graduation.
For the best. Yeah. I mean, I probably would have remembered this guy if Trump had not risen to power in the way he did.
Yeah, maybe.
That sticks out in my mind. All right. So the X-Men are, some of the X-Men are graduating. And
yes.
Scott's happy to get out of this place. I was relating to him as well in that respect.
Yeah. They run into Principal Kelly and he's like, Scott and Jean, like, we don't want any kind of mutant trouble at the graduation tomorrow. So, like, make sure that nothing happens or something. He's real forceful with them. Meanwhile, Rogue gets out of this limousine. She's going to the Brotherhood mansion and she, like, steals Wanda's powers first and then uses, like, all the powers that she's saved up to steal them from the rest of the gang there.
As she's stealing their powers, you get this dumb montage of them all eating breakfast, too. And it's just gross the way they show Toad and Blob sharing cereal together.
It's very different from that X-Mansion scene. I guess that's the point of it or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that they're slobs and the X-Men are fun, like, happy campgoers or something.
Meanwhile, Mystique is just waiting for Rogue in the limo. So it turns out Mystique is the one that's kind of like...
So Mystique's in league with Mesmero, I guess.
I guess.
And Mesmero, I guess, is, like, working for Apocalypse. Which is interesting because, you know,
about... at this point, we still don't know anything about Mesmero being behind it necessarily, except that in the last episode, he was like behind stuff.
Well, the only reason I knew is because the title caption for the episode on Disney Plus just gives it away immediately.
Oh.
Mesmero brainwashes Mystique. Oh. I'm not Mystique, Rogue.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, Rogue finishes stealing all their powers. They're all, like, passed out on the floor, and then she gets back into the limo with Mystique. Back at the X-Mansion, it's later at night. Everyone's home from school. Storm says, like, don't worry, guys. I won't let it rain at graduation tomorrow. And Jean's like, great. And she reveals that she's thinking about studying medicine, and Professor X is very proud of her.
Might be a nod to the movies, which was kind of a revelation to us when we were talking about the movies, is that Dr. Jean Grey was not a thing from the comics.
Mm-hmm.
That she's only a doctor in the movies, and it's because they didn't have Beast. They wanted the medical X-Man in the mansion, so they made Famke Janssen a doctor.
Right, that makes sense.
Right, so maybe, and these movies are sort of like picking up a lot of their, at least their stylistic cues from the movies.
These episodes are?
Right. Well, just in general, X-Men Evolution does. Yeah. So I wonder if they're like, oh, let's make her a doctor like she was in the movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Professor X talks about how, like, she can come to him for advice on that at any point. I was like, wait, is she going to be a psychologist? That type of doctor? Also, Professor X, I don't know if you're, like, the greatest person to get advice from in
Summer,
this iteration.
Xavier and Grey, bad therapists.
Yeah. I don't... Maybe she'd practice. Be better. Yeah, she seems like she has her stuff together in this run here.
I was going to say, just going back to the movies about Dr. Jean Grey, I just think that a credit to those early movies is that there's so many good stylistic character beats like that in those movies that it's just interesting how it just made me think that in the comics, Jean was also a doctor. I'm like, yeah, all the, like, I wouldn't be surprised if most of the X-Men had their doctorates studying at the
Xavier
School.
No, she was a woman in the 60s. There's no way they would make her a doctor in the
I was thinking more of, like, the 90s X-Men. And, when it got, like, the comics got a lot more sophisticated when they were more, like, sexy adults.
Yeah, yeah.
With the Jim Lee era, you just kind of felt that they were all just so hyper-competent.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed, very, and in the way, and that, too, even in from the original X-Men cartoon as well, Jean really felt like Professor X's assistant or direct colleague in a way.
Because they have like similar power sets.
Right, similar powers, and Jean didn't have a code name, and she's just sort of like always the professor's
sidekick or
like Spock or something to Captain Kirk a little bit, just the way they like hung out together. And
also, you get a thing with superheroes where because they're fighting in battles all the time, it seems like everybody has a little bit of patch-up know-how or something, you know? Like, not that they're doctors necessarily, but, like, if someone has to take a bullet in the course of action, like, someone around you is going to know how to deal with that.
Yeah, which, imagine if that happened to one of us, we'd be so fucked.
Done.
Yeah. It's like, if I was a doctor and you got shot in the leg, you'd be bleeding out. I'd be like, well, I can't do anything. Let's hope the ambulance comes. Yeah. As opposed to me, like, listen, I've got these forceps in my back pocket. I'm going to be able to get the bullet. Like, you just see in all these movies.
They always have a metal cup at the side so the bullet can, like, clink.
Yep, absolutely. And just the idea that people are keyed up the forceps or something to get in there to sterilize the wound. Like, the whole thing.
Yeah,
this is,
they know how to sew it up expertly at the end.
I would kill you faster if I attempted to, like, in a panic moment, recollect anything going on to save your life.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. I mean, would you be prepared to suck out the venom of a snake bite of someone if you're on a trail?
I wouldn't even know how to go about that.
Right, like, wouldn't you be so paranoid?
Do you just literally, like, grab their arm and, like, vampire it? Like, what do you do?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. It's like I don't know, like, how quickly to spit it out. Or, like, what if I accidentally swallow it? Or, you know, I just feel that it's, like, that's another thing from movies where you know you're supposed to suck out the venom. I mean, that actually even might be something if you...
I don't even know if that's true.
Right,
is that true?
That might just be a thing where you're not supposed to suck out the venom. There's something else. Who the fuck knows? But,
right, anyway. That's like if you get jellyfish.
There's another. We'd be in trouble with that as well.
They say you're supposed to pee on it, but then I read that that's not really a thing.
You just be peeing on each other as you die from jellyfish poisoning. All right. What happens next? So where were we? She's in the Brotherhood Mansion stealing all their powers. Jean is thinking about studying medicine. That's where we left off.
Right. Okay. So next, like, the limo pulls up to some other building, And Mystique, like, reaches out her hand and gives Rogue her powers on purpose so that Rogue can turn into an owl and fly into some window and sneak up on Colossus and steal his powers.
Now, I like this because she steals Colossus' power and you get to see Metallo Rogue.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
But here she is, like, at, I guess it's Magneto's stronghold.
Yeah, some kind of somewhere. Hidden base of his.
So then she goes around stealing all their powers from Sabretooth, Pyro, Gambit.
Well, Gambit, that was the fun one.
Yeah, there's a little nod to their romance in this. She right. steals his powers by giving him a kiss, and he's the only one that kind of holds her off here for yeah. a minute.
Gambit, they've sort of established Gambit to be like not a bad guy exactly. Like, we don't know why he's working for Magneto.
It seems opportunistic in some way, probably.
Yeah.
Who knows what the money exchange is like in this universe?
So you think he's just being paid by Magneto to do his bidding?
Maybe, or at least room and board, right?
Yeah. Gambit's an interesting character. I don't know how they're going to introduce him in the movies. I have a feeling like they might go the X-Men Evolution path where he starts off as a bad guy.
Yeah.
I could see that.
I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, I think, but I mean, the thing I love about the original cartoon is he's just on the team. Nobody trusts him. And Wolverine's a similar character in a way, too. Shady past, gruff attitude. They're both, like, super cool loners.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, it's like, in theory, that doesn't seem like that's good for a team ensemble. But actually,
they both turn out to be, like, what's the expression? Like, worth their medal or something?
Well, it's just fun to have two badasses on the same team together. It actually doubles the fun.
It's actually kind of surprising that they haven't used Gambit yet in that way, because Wolverine was such a hit. Like, you would think that they could replicate
why didn't they think that Gambit is gonna be this breakout character, let's make him a major guy in one of the movies. I mean, I know they did it in Wolverine Origins, but he was like a dumb side character that sucked.
Yeah.
Everything about that character sucked, as we talked about in the Wolverine Origins episode.
Right.
But it's kind of like, you're right, it's kind of like even in one of the reboots with the Days of Future Past, like how did they just had Gambit on the shelf? Like, Gambit just seems to be this, like, who...
Maybe there's, like, really just drawing it out, saving him for later.
What later, though? I mean, Fox didn't know they were selling to Disney.
Yeah.
I mean, they were going to do the Channing Tatum Gambit movie.
Right.
So they're like, maybe that's what they thought. It's like, let's make a Gambit movie. We're not going to waste him in an X-Men ensemble piece.
Right, like one thing at a time here.
But I don't know. Gambit is ripe for his moment, for sure. I was going back to my original point, I liked how he just appeared in the team in the 90s cartoon, that it wasn't this drawn out thing where they built him up. Him being on the team itself just felt mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why is Gambit teamed up with these people?
Right.
And that's not even something they really fully explained in the original cartoon.
I never
either.
Really questioned that, because I didn't know anything from the comics when I was watching the cartoon.
Yeah.
So I just was like, okay, he's part of the team, whatever.
Yeah.
But then, like, you do get the undertones of mistrust from everybody around him. So then you start thinking, like, oh, what's with him? And then you get that incredible episode with, like, Calypso, where they're, like, down in the bayou or whatever, and then, like, his past starts to get explained
not
a little
Calypso,
bit more.
The Eternal or something.
Well,
with the thieves and assassins.
Exactly,
everyone knows what we're talking about,
right.
Yeah. I mean, you got a little bit of his past, but it doesn't exactly say why he joined the X-Men specifically after... I think Beast at one point hints that, like, Gambit probably spent a lot of time in prison, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what made me think, like, why having two badass action stars on the same team who are both kind of surly and secretive is a good idea? We saw it in The Expanse.
Mm.
Remember, there's two characters. This one guy, Amos, who's essentially like, he's like a young Arnold Schwarzenegger Stallone type. Like, he's super jacked up and built. He's very laconic in the way he speaks. He's every action scene he has is so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
He can just beat the shit out of people, and he's really awesome at using guns. So you get that, just that Schwarzenegger self, like, you know how he's just super intimidating. Nothing can faze him.
But he's not silly. Like, Schwarzenegger
right.
and
he's
Stallone
American.
Are, like, silly sometimes when you watch them. You're like, come on. But he's, like,
a
little unhinged.
You get that,
like,
sense, though, of, like, Schwarzenegger in a room in his prime is, like, he's going to handle himself, and you're just so satisfied and happy to see him doing it.
Yeah, I can see the comparison,
So you got that one guy in The Expanse, and then the other character you have is the New Zealand...
The Marine.
Right, the Marine woman from Mars.
Yeah.
I forget her name.
Bobby.
And she's also... She's, like, this completely, like, athletically jacked woman who is an insane badass too. Mm-hmm. And they team up a few times on The Expanse. Awesome. And it's just like seeing them kick ass together. It made me think about Wolverine and Gambit. I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah. Like, the more these guys on the team, the better sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, two people with, like, very, like, short tempers that know how to, like, are completely strong. It doesn't hurt. It's not like you're throwing the balance off.
Right.
By having them on the same side.
Right. And they both have, like, really different journeys to morality. Right, like, yeah. He had, like, a real traumatic childhood and Can't really tell right from wrong, but really wants to.
And she's got a military background where she's very...
And she, like, discovers the truth of, like, Her reality she's little so by
committed,
little.
Right, she's and, so like, committed to the military, and then she's betrayed by the military, so she has to question her whole...
Right, like, which life. Is, like, the Wolverine story, kind of.
Similar, right. So, I mean, that's my point, too. It's like the audience can appreciate the shades of gray when you have to... sort of mysterious badass characters like that. It's not like it, you know, you need one guy who's like happy-go-lucky and the other guy has to be surly.
Right.
You can have like similar characters. It actually, in some ways, it makes it more interesting.
Right, yeah. Because then they do team up and then also you get to they like explore the nuance
don't like each other.
Between them.
Yeah, exactly.
So that would be awesome to see.
Right. I mean, that's like, honestly, it was like, we watched so many of those 80s movies with Seagal, Schwarzenegger, Stallone. The fact that none of those guys really teamed up at their primes in a movie is just such a missed cinematic moment in history.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it happened so far too late with Stallone and Schwarzenegger. They finally did that dumbass. I mean, they did the Expendables movies, which suck. Sorry if you're a fan of them. And then they did like that Escape Plan movie, which I've never seen, but I hear it's just god awful.
But the whole thing with them was that they were movie stars, so they didn't really...
They weren't ready to
like
share the screen together.
I don't know if it was about them or like the studio didn't want them to have to share the spotlight.
It's so... I mean,
about marketing like their personality, you know?
I mean, to me, one of the greatest what-ifs ever was Tarantino wanted to combine them all for Inglourious Basterds. His original script was like... It specifically was like Schwarzenegger, Stallone...
Oh, wow.
Van Damme, at least, I think. And, like, maybe Bruce Willis. Like, they were all...
Steven Seagal.
They were going to be the bastards. I don't know if he's going to go with Seagal. That might have been... Seagal's such a weirdo and such a corrosive... Like, it doesn't seem like you'd even... Do you know if Seagal's in the Expendables movies? No, not Chuck Norris.
I don't know.
He's not good enough an actor.
Just trying to think of all our action heroes.
But the point is just
but
like...
yeah, like, those guys...
Right, like, if Tarantino would have made the most incredible fucking movie if he had Schwarzenegger and Stallone in an action movie, and you still even see... In Inglourious Basterds, there's hints of it because they have that German guy who kills the Nazis that joins the bastards, And he is essentially a Schwarzenegger stand-in. He's big and burly like Schwarzenegger, and he doesn't say much, and he's very like he's got like the Schwarzenegger type of humor. It's interesting how he just sort of he kills them off very quickly, and it's kind of unsatisfying in that way. But then again, that movie's like all about like quick bursts of like satisfying scenes, but then like the resolutions don't really go where you think they are. Anyway, that would have been like, can you imagine that movie? I think he was playing that in the 90s when these guys still like maybe at the very tail end of their peaks, Like when you get them in their 40s or even early 50s when you could they're still like believable action stars.
I mean
that would have just like been the most fun thing imaginable, but it's a shame that like that's just something that's like if you can go back in time, like I would make sure it would happen that you got like those guys in a
that
movie
would be your mission.
A good movie, like get what's his name, who's the fucking director of Starship Troopers and RoboCop. I know his name, it's just because I'm talking about him, it's just the tip of my tongue. The Total Recall guy, have him a movie with Schwarzenegger and Stallone, he would not have fucked it up.
Right.
It would have been so good. Like, really sardonic and ultra-violent and, like, have something to say about society, too.
Right.
Anyway, so Rogue is completing her collection of all the mutants. She gets Gambit with the kiss. Then she gets Magneto. She kind of gets him pretty easily, I thought. I mean, at this point, she's so ultra-powered, but her move is still just like, I just need to touch your face. Wait, so who's the
director? Paul Verhoeven.
Yeah, Verhoeven. Yeah, I can't believe that slipped my mind.
Yeah.
Verhoeven, Cameron.
Sorry, look it up. It was bothering
There's
me.
Three directors that would have made the most incredible movie that never existed. Verhoeven, Cameron, or Tarantino. Mm-hmm. If they had those guys all together, that would have been quite something.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she gets Magneto's powers. But now we're at graduation day. It's a beautiful day. They're graduating. Principal Kelly's giving a speech.
The speech is weird. It's all about, like, Even though there are some peers amongst you who have special privileges and powers, you can still persevere.
He's trying to slide in his anti-mutant bigotry into the speech. But then the Brotherhood does show up in the middle of the graduation. Rogue is there too. Like, why is Rogue there?
And she's a zombie. Scott and Jean? I don't know.
But she's zombified because Mesmero is there also controlling her.
Right.
It's just like a weird scene where the Brotherhood enters, everyone in the graduation scares and runs away, and the X-Men decide they have to team up with the bad guys to stop Mesmero.
Right, because Professor X and Magneto both know that Mesmero has some kind of designs on Apocalypse and it's not going to be good for anybody. So they put their differences aside.
I miss what happens to Rogue in the scene. Magneto tries to sort of contain her with his powers. Mm-hmm. But what happens with Rogue? Does she get away with Mesmero?
Yes.
Okay. Or whatever. Anyway.
Not with Mesmero. Maybe Mesmero's controlling her? I don't know. She, like, flies away and, like, using other people's powers and stuff. And Professor X is like, Wolverine, you have to track her. We can't lose her.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And then Magneto, like, assigns, I guess, Gambit and Sabretooth to go along with Wolverine because he needs some of his guys to do it too. I don't know.
So they're all sort of antagonistic against each other. They have to form a team. Magneto and Professor X go to the mansion. They get into the lore of Apocalypse. Magneto seems to know a lot more about it than Professor X does. He's like, there's this guy, and Nubs of whatever his real name is, I can't pronounce it, or I don't remember the pronunciation. They're like looking him up on the computer, and they're talking about he ruled this Egyptian dynasty 5,000 years ago, mm-hmm. And he's about to be resurrected. We have to find him.
To the X-Jet.
Right, to the X-Jet. They all fly to Egypt. Some nice establishing shots of modern-day Egypt look cool. Mm-hmm. They land the jet in the desert there where the pyramids are. They're right outside the Sphinx,
mm-hmm.
and...
They decide that's the place to dig.
Right. They send Kitty down there, which is a cool scene. Kitty phases through the dirt and finds a secret antechamber that's never been discovered. We've been watching a lot of Egyptian documentary stuff lately. And I know we might have talked about it on the podcast, but it is fun to just bring up the idea that the way they hype up all these documentaries on Discovery Channel and everything, it's like, we sent a whole group of scientists to the Great Pyramid of Giza with all this modern equipment, and you're not going to believe what they found. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh shit, like, like buried treasures, secret, ancient, tombs.
Uh-huh.
And they never find anything. And the whole episode, the whole like hour and 10 minutes of the documentary is about like constantly hyping you up for... Like,
I mean, I think that's probably just what it is when you're an archaeologist, right? You dig in the dirt and you hope to find stuff. And like a lot of times you don't find stuff, but they spent all the money with the documentary crew and stuff. Yeah. So they don't want to just throw that away. They want to put it out there as something. So they add the dramatic music and
they're just constantly promising you that like after the break, we're gonna find stuff.
See what we've uncovered. Right. And it's like a rock or something. They're this may be a shard of pottery that dates back to before other pottery that we found over here.
And then the documentary itself, by the time it gets to the very end, you like think like, oh well, surely now, like they've been promising something. It just fizzles out. They're just like, the search goes on for the lost secrets of Egypt.
Yeah. Well, recently they did find stuff, right? Wasn't it like last month or...
They found the remains of a village or something.
And the first pregnant mummified person.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know if it was the same place, that might have been separate.
But the reason the archaeology is so intense in Egypt to this day is because they're looking for treasure and shit. You know, like they want...
You think that's why?
Yeah, they want another King Tut moment.
Because it was like there's so much good preservation that isn't possible in other climates. So
and that's part of it too. I mean, like obviously the real archaeology, I don't think they're expecting to find like tombs filled with gold and rubies,
mm-hmm.
but I think...
Well, the whole thing is that all of, like, the tombs of gold and rubies have been pillaged since the time that they were buried.
Right, yeah. They're, like, 100 years after the most powerful pharaoh died, grave robbers got in there, looted the thing to high heaven.
Yeah.
When people were really believing in the ancient religion of that stuff, when it would have been, like, the ultimate sacrilege.
Right.
It's like, well, back then are like, fuck it, I don't care what curse I'm getting, I am stealing this
gold.
But
people back then, there must have been, like, secular people just like there are now. I'm sure not everybody was so religious.
I think it's not even about being secular or not, it's just the idea of it's like money gold. Money equals power, and you're just gonna get it. Like nothing's gonna stop you from rob if it's just sitting there somewhere, you're just gonna go grab it. I mean, it does make me think like how the present day stores of gold in the world are so insanely well protected.
Yeah,
It's just a different era. You've got the security cameras, the guard, the armed guards, and the just like the vaults, the impenetrable vaults. Mm-hmm. Like in New York City, we might have even discussed this on an episode in the past too. Like
at Wall Street,
right? At Wall Street, buried underground is like the world's currency reserve, which is like it's supposed
all these gold bars,
like more gold than Fort Knox is buried in the under the streets of Wall Street.
Yeah.
And it's just like that would be a fun movie to make as a premise, like some Ocean's 11 guys, or... goes to rob the Federal Reserve or whatever at Wall Street.
Hmm.
I mean, it'd be impossible too because it's like the weight of gold is so much. James Bond talks about it in Goldfinger.
Hmm.
He says, "Goldfinger, you'll never be able to take all that gold out of Fort Knox. It would take weeks of teams around the clock." He's like, "I don't want to steal the gold, Mr. Bond. I want to blow it up."
I like your impressions.
Savvy move, Goldfinger. Oh, that's a great movie. That's my favorite Bond movie for sure, is Goldfinger. I'm a simple man when it comes to Bond, and it's like I know the Roger Moore ones are great, and I have a soft spot for
Pierce Brosnan.
Daniel Craig's all right. I mean, they're not as good as they should be.
No, they're pretty disgusting.
People love them. Disgusting. Obviously, yeah. They're just like whatever.
Just like the opulence and the misogyny. Like.
But that's always been in... I mean, the
yeah, fun... Yeah, I know. It's right. Part of it, yeah.
I just think they're too slick. And they're too... Like, they amount... Like, the problem with the Daniel Craig version, it's like they're trying to make him a real character.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the emotional stakes are, like, really jolted up to 11 in a way for the guy. Which is not, to me, the fun part of Bond. To me, the fun part of Bond is that he's... like a cartoon a little bit as a person.
Yeah.
His personality.
That's what makes the 60s ones fun.
Yeah.
You know,
right. And the Roger Moore.
Goldfinger.
I think the Roger Moore funds are even more fun because he's even more of that cartoony like personality. I mean, although Connery has a sort of authenticity to, you know.
Yeah.
But whatever. The point is like, I'll be excited to see the next Bond. I had enough of Daniel Craig.
Do we know who it's going to be?
No, I don't know, because the movie that has been sitting on the shelf for over a year, the last Bond film, the one that Phoebe Waller-Bridge, what's her name?
Phoebe Waller-Bridge?
Yeah, I think she helped write it. So that one, that's the finale for the Daniel Craig universe, and that's just been taking forever to come out.
Hmm.
I do want to see that, though.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
But still, like, I'm just... But that happens to all the Bond series. They get stale.
Yeah.
The Pierce Brosnan ones definitely got stale.
Yeah.
And the Roger Moore ones got stale. The Connery ones got stale. They all, like... It's all about, like, getting a new Bond in there with a new take and sort of, like, it's always about, like, resetting the premise, which is based in the current real world.
Right. It's, and, like, every decade they have to, like, hit the reset button.
Right. And it's like you reimagine what being an ultra-spy would be like in the new day and age.
Mm-hmm.
And so... We'll see. Maybe perhaps some future Bond talk. All right, so what's going on here? They've all convened at the Sphinx in a secret underground chamber.
Katie finds, like, the button to press so that it opens the magical entrance staircase. Everybody goes down the stairs, both sides, teams.
Nice little character beat from Katie as she's waiting for everyone to descend the long staircase. She's a little afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the statues guarding the entrance to the apocalypse chamber come alive. I'm guessing they're the four horsemen,
maybe? I'm guessing, yeah. Because there were four of them, and they're shaped like the Egyptian gods.
Right. So, so the X-Men, it ends right there.
They're trapped underground.
Right. Cyclops says we're trapped, which, you see the cement door close behind them, which is, I'm like, dude, like... Every character in here could easily get out. This is not a trap. And starting with you just blast your way right
Kitty
back
can
up.
Phase right through.
Right. Magneto could do something. Colossus could punch his way out. Like, literally nobody is trapped, but it's okay. So we'll see how it resolves next week. But it was an okay episode. I mean, I just think it was... The setup wasn't quite that interesting. I mean, like, seeing Rogue steal all the powers is fun, but they recently had just done that.
Mm.
So it wasn't... There's nothing, like, new... There's no revelation there in terms of that gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
The
revelation is going to be how she uses it in the next episode, right?
Maybe, unless she loses the powers. Like,
but then what would be the point of going through all that?
I don't know. What the
whole
point
thing is
going to
have to be, like, she
is...
has all the powers saved up, like, inside her somehow. Yeah, and then she, like, uses them in some incredible way.
Maybe,
Mesmero's behalf next
or
episode.
Or to, you know, rebel against him and help fight Apocalypse.
Right.
We'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I have for this week. Do you have any final words, Sonia, before we depart yet again?
That's all.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.